ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
So through a series of mixed signals and my tendency to be easily confused, I was told of giving class on this verse. So we're not going to do a Bhagavatam verse. Others more expert than me have managed to combine both. But we're just going to do this verse. So there it is. And I guess I'll just say a line, you say a line. We'll try it that way. Kuverat majau bada murtyai vayadvat. Tvaya mochi tau bhakti bhajau kritau cha. Tata prema bhaktim swa kame priyacha. Namo kshegra home sti damadareha. And the translation, O Lord Damodar, this is the seventh verse. O Lord Damodar, as a baby tied to a grinding mortar, you delivered Kuvera's two sons from the curse of Narada and made them into great devotees. In the same way, please give me pure loving devotion for you. I long for this alone and have no desire for any kind of liberation. Om Agnatim Randasya Gyan Agnasalakaya Chakshushun Militan Gena Tazare Shri Gurave Namaha. Now, we're going to try. I always am a little embarrassed when I see the senior lineup there. So, please, better I was sitting and you were speaking, but such is the hand of fate. Please, I hope I can say something of value or interest to you. A bird flies in the sky according to its ability, so I can only speak as far as I have some understanding, but what is it that you can take gold from an unclean place and a good lesson even from a fool? So hopefully you will manage to extract something from my ramblings. But we do want to cover some ground. Just as preliminaries, we're talking about liberation. It's being rejected. I don't care for liberation. That which the great jnanis, that which intellectuals to get relief. Sanatana Goswami compares liberation. He says it's like the relief from not being hungry. When you're hungry, okay, it's sort of a static state. I'm not hungry anymore. Or he says it is like the happiness of a deep sleep. Okay, there's no real, beyond dreaming, there's no real experience. But there's some static state of no pain. But that is aspired to by people since time immemorial. And we have no interest in it. And if you think about it, even as a kid, I remember thinking that isn't the... I just came from Myanmar, from Burma, so it's Buddhism. So I was just thinking, isn't the desire to be desireless a self-centered desire? Work like what's the sound of one hand clapping? Work your mind around that one. The desire to become desireless, well, that's a self-centered desire. So you're stuck. Let me give you another one. This is a fun one. This is a mental exercise. Listening? Do not think of the color red. Don't think about it. Don't think about red. Mm-hmm. How's that working out for you? Huh? Red, 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 you know? So, but how to get rid of thinking about red? Don't think about blue. Do not think about the color blue. But immediately red's gone, blue's there. So it is artificial, this liberation state. One of the greatest, you can ask George Bush about this, one of the greatest sufferings, torture, if you want to torture someone, I mean, devotees want to give mercy, they don't want to torture. But if you want to torture someone, you know, one of the strongest, if you want to break the will of someone, it's not waterboarding. It's not pulling their fingernails out or, you know, whatever it is. You know what it is? Sense deprivation. You put them in a place where it's completely dark and there's no sense of time, or alternatively, you put it where it's complete light. No, it's just bright light. People break, it's the fastest way to break somebody's will. The problem is it's so discombobulating. It's so disorienting. It's so alien to our experience. The people just go mad. You lose them. They go. They skate right over the edge. You can't get the information out of them. They just break. So the idea that somehow or other my home and om is going to be the ultimate salvation, no. It's artificial. It's unnatural. And it can't be sustained. So we don't care for liberation, especially when we know there's an alternative. So we're not so, if you may want, Giri Raj Maharaj told me, and then we'll move on. But Giri Raj Maharaj told me that, he's preaching in Mumbai, and they go out late at night, home programs. By the time they come back, it's, sometimes it'd be midnight, long drive back. And Prabhupada had trained him not to waste. So he saw that the light was on in Prabhupada's study about 12:30. So he didn't want to make it. He thought Prabhupada's resting. He just put his hand around the corner and flicked the light off. Oh! Prabhupada was sitting at his desk, and he shut the light off on Srila Prabhupada. So he turned the light back on, offers obeisances. He said, "Oh, Prabhupada, I didn't know that you were up. I thought you were sleeping." Prabhupada says, "I don't sleep much." And then Prabhupada said, "I don't eat much." He said, "I'm a sannyasi." He said, "There's no question of sex." And then Prabhupada said, "I'm an old man. There's no question of defending." Then Prabhupada took inventory. No eating, no sleeping, no mating, no defending. Maybe I'm liberated. I mean, we know that Prabhupada was far beyond, liberation is at Prabhupada's doorstep, begging to come in. So liberation, it doesn't mean much to us. And then, what this verse is talking about, it's not talking about Hinduism. It's not talking about a religious system. There's so many religious systems, but I'll tell you, just like what is it, a common denominator, you reduce them down 8/16 to 4/8 to 2/4 to 1/2, you get the lowest common denominator. You look at religious systems around the world, and you will find that, generally speaking, they're simply based on, reward and relief. God give me this, God give me that. I saw a bumper sticker, somebody in America, they have so many bumper stickers, "God is good to me now." And I was thinking, wait, he wasn't good to you yesterday? He wasn't, what does that mean, God's, oh, because I got my girlfriend, or I won the lottery, or we won the football game, now God is good to me? So, think about it. There was an uncle in my family, Uncle Chuck. And the only time Uncle Chuck showed up is when he wanted money from my father. You could count on it. He would say, "Oh, I'm coming over. I want to see how everybody's doing." My father would just say, "How much do you want?" Just make it easy, you know. You want a check or cash, bank transfer, just get it over with, you know. So, although he was my father's older brother, their relationship wasn't very sweet. And if you think about it, that every time, Prabhupada said, I was listening to a tape about Mahatma Gandhi, he said the poor fellow couldn't sleep, that everywhere he went, they were, "Mahatma Gandhi ki jai, Mahatma Gandhi ki jai," everywhere the poor man couldn't sleep. So every time you meet someone, the only reason they want to see you is because they want something. What can you give me? How do you feel about that? Do you call that person a friend? As soon as I give them what they want, they're gone. They forget all about me until they need something again. Is that a friendship? It's an acquaintance, but it's not a friendship. And so the only God give me this, Prabhupada calls it, it's one of those classic lines. It was a turning point. Prabhupada talks, for me, in my life, Prabhupada said, one of the Mahavakyams of, and I don't mean to pick on the Christians, we can pick on the Hindus, Om Jaya Jagadish Hari, give me a new car and a house by the sea. Okay, so they have it also. And the Christians say, God give us this day our daily bread. Prabhupada said, this is not love of God, it is love of bread. Nails it. There it is in his sutra. It's not really love of God. And then Prabhupada, he gives them an inch. He said, all right, it's official love of God, but not much more. That's what he says in teaching the Lord Chaitanya. It's official love of God, but not much more. So here we're talking, Prabhupada was saying, they're thinking that daily bread, if God doesn't give me daily bread, I'm going to die. Okay. Well, what is Mother Yasoda thinking? Mother Yasoda's thinking, if I don't feed Krishna, she's not thinking God, but we know God. If I don't feed him, he'll die. It's polar opposites. You see the difference? She's not thinking about herself, what she wants, what she needs. I want, give me this. God is an ATM machine, or Amazon, the ultimate cosmic Amazon. She's not thinking that. She's simply thinking, my dear Krishna, he's dependent on me. If I don't take care of him, let me feed him nicely. That's bhakti. It is a polar opposite of religious systems. And in the first two lines, it's just rejected. It's bounced right off in this verse. So, I did want to... Let's just relish for a moment. It's such an amazing thing. And why do we believe it? We're going to get into it in a minute. But just think about it. You know, the Bhagavatam loves to juxtapose, you know, to counterpoint and point, you know, to balance things off each other. So, niti niti nam chetanas chetananam eko bahanam yovadati kaman. That Krishna's maintaining everything, right? Maintaining all, he's the chief individual, maintaining all the others. And yet, here he is, he's hungry. He's feeding everyone. Prabhupada says the elephant eats, you know, bales of hitamits, tons of hay. You know, Prabhupada gets into it. The ant, a little bit of sugar. But Krishna's feeding everyone. And yet, that person, that entity that is maintaining all others, he's hungry? How is it possible? He's the husband of the goddess of fortune. She's living on his chest, taking shelter of his chest, never leaves his lotus feet. And yet he's a butter thief. Yet he's a thief. Husband of the goddess of fortune, and yet he's a thief. I mean, how does the mind process? It's so sweet. Here he is, in this verse, he's giving liberation to the two sons of Kuvera. Complete liberation. And he can't even untie himself from a mortar. It's fantastic. And people just think, you know, he's the universal form. Prabhupada said one time about the universe. And it's so, I mean, Arjuna sees the universal form. He's just stunned. He's petrified. He's speechless. He's terrified. Overwhelmed by the opulence and awe and just, you can't even put it in words. Oppenheimer, when they exploded the atomic bomb for the first time, quoted the verse about, if I saw millions of suns rising together. Gives you some idea of the atomic bomb, or of the universal form. And yet, he's just a small baby. That abdomen, even if you're a Vedantist, from which the lotus comes and all the planetary systems come, that same abdomen is now bound with a rope. I mean, how is it possible? It is a profound contradiction of terms. But let me ask you this. When I was a kid, you know, that we're doing the TOVP, Temple of the Vedic Planetarium. And that's a whole issue in and of itself. You know, the reason for that, Prabhupada's genius of that. But when I was a kid, I think it was fourth grade science. Anybody here make a model, a mobile, you know, hanging, take styrofoam balls and paint them different colors and make a model of the universe? I did it when I was a kid. Does this mean... Oh, welcome to class. I hope he doesn't offer his respects in their unique form there. You might want to move a little bit. A fourth grader can understand the structure of the universe? No. So many amazing, inconceivable things. The fact that I'm sitting here speaking to you and that you can hear a pile of carbon, I mean, that's a pretty amazing thing. You know, with the soul inside, of course. So we see, one man said, can you show me God? Prabhupada said, that's not the question. Can you show me the mystic power of God? Prabhupada said, that's not the question. The question is, why can't you see the mystic power of God? It's everywhere. It's all around us. You make a machine, give it straw, and make me milk. Go ahead, try it. You know, Krishna makes a cow, and you make the miracle food for old men and babies. So, shouldn't the... I mean, just to believe that there's God, that's a major hurdle. But if there's God, the source of so many inconceivable, shouldn't his activities be amazing? Shouldn't they be astounding? Shouldn't they just freeze the brain? He's a baby, and he's the universal form, and he's the husband of the goddess of fortune, and he's begging and stealing. That's God. God should completely challenge and rattle all of our conceptions. It should, as they say in the old days, blow the mind. That's God. He shouldn't be an old man. Well, I'm old. My grandfather was older. My great-grandfather was. All right, so God should be the oldest. He should be with a walker and no teeth and gray hair and not in a very good mood. Throwing thunderbolts, smiting. And what is the past? Smite? Smit? Smitten? Do you smote? Smote. So, he's smitten in the past, he's smiting, and he'll smote you in the future. You know, he's throwing thunderbolts. He's not a very happy guy. I would not want to meet God alone. You know, the Christian concept, unless I had something to supplicate, you know, something to appease him, you know. So, it should not, God should not be something that, the personality of God, it should be not be something that we can work out in our own little pea brains. Should be absolute. Well, that's just too much. Yes. And it should be. So, but at the same time, it is profoundly logical. We are not sentimentalists. We've not created a worldview to get us through a dark night or the fear of death. The lonely nothingness of the universe, that there must be some reciprocation with the cosmos. I'm not all alone. I'm not just plasma flashing for a moment. No. These are not mental constructs to help us make it through the night. It is profoundly logical. And we're going to take a little walk down that path. But let me premise it. We believe fantastic stories. The Bhagavatam is full of absolutely fantastic, impossible stories. We do not run away from them. A little blue boy standing in front of Lord Brahma with a little bit of, you know, the yogurt and the rice are coming through his fingers and appears to be an uneducated village boy is the cause of all causes. I mean, come on. We don't run away from that. We stand on that. We believe in those fantastic... We present those fantastic stories. Because here's the thing. The materialists, who will call themselves realists, I'm a realist, you've got some sentimental something going on there, they believe fantastic stories too. It is not that, well, you have these fantastic, illogical, just, you know, give me a break. How many things are wrong in this picture? And we're realists. You know, we've got a structure. We've got physics. It all works out. We can put all the pieces together. No, they dark matter. We don't have time to get into it. You know, dark matter is 90% of the matter in the universe. They don't know where it is. That's why it's dark matter. Can't find it. Go to a grocery store. Go over here to that, whatever it is, 7-Eleven or whatever, little store. Give them 100 rupees for a $10 item, and they don't give you their change back. They owe you 90 rupees. And the guy says, no, they're dark rupees. They're there, you just can't see them. Anybody in this room accept that logic? I mean, it's simplistic, but the principle is true. Anybody here accept that? It's a fudge factor, because they can't figure out how the universe holds together with its gravitational pushes and pulls. Nothing works out. They've just invented something called dark matter. And it's 90% of the universe, of the material in the universe. They don't know where it is. Whoops. I mean, we could go on. I mean, there's just... They believe that everything came from nothing. That guy at MIT... The creation, existence is the original free lunch. Everything came from nothing. They've got the math down all the... It's to, you know, whatever it is, some nanosecond before the... You know, it all exploded out of a singularity. A point, infinitesimally small, infinitesimally dense, and everything came out of it. Sariputta said, well, there's a point. Oh, there's another point. There's a point. Why that point? No argument. You know what when they actually get pinned, what they actually say, it's not Stephen Gould, I forget who the guy was. He says, give us one free miracle and we'll explain the rest. What caused that singularity to, infinitesimally small, infinitesimally hot and dense, poof, everything came out of it. What caused that? Even you buy, and they've got all the math, you know, they think. And his answer, give me one free miracle. So, you want a singularity? Mother Yasoda looks in Krishna's mouth and sees all the universes coming from baby Krishna's mouth. That's the singularity, one point from which everything emanates. That makes sense, and we'll get into that in a minute. But my point is, look at a pan balance. You know pan balance?
Oh, you Hare Krishnas, you believe so many amazing stories, all fantastic mumbo jumbo. I'm a realist.
Well, hang on a minute. You've got your pile of fantastic stories, too. Your stories are as we will try in the next few minutes to poke a few holes that perhaps what they... Believing in fantastic stories is not the issue. Which set of fantastic stories is the issue? You follow me? It's not believing in... we believe in fantastic... You do. No. Fantastic stories are there. They believe the materialists, they believe fantastic stories. We believe fantastic stories. Okay, we're on a par. Now the question is, which set of fantastic stories do we choose to believe? That's the question, not fantastic stories. So let's work with it for a minute. I mean, the whole principle of physics, the whole principle is that ultimately, you go back, it's like nati, Shankar philosophy. There's a cause. Well, this was caused by this. Well, this was caused by this. This was caused by this. They're doing the same thing. Cause, cause, cause. Now, so there has to be a cause. Here's the first question. Either everything's going on by chance with no rhyme or reason, or there's a design behind it. Either it's random physics, I'm just, you know, it's all just matter. Krishna says in Gita, you know, it's all chemicals, none of it matters. And, you know, it's taken form for some time. It'll, you know, it's a river of names only. I think somebody said that yesterday, Jayadwaita Maharshi. It's a river of names only. You're projecting, but it's just matter. But it has a cause. They don't know what the cause is. They try to say the cause is a singular. They try to say the cause is spontaneous. They try to say matter has always existed. But there's a cause. That they agreed to. If they didn't believe a cause, they wouldn't be spending all their time with their experiments. That this was caused by this, this was caused by that. They wouldn't be having their billions of dollars on an atom smasher. If they didn't, they weren't trying to find out what is the ultimate cause. So the question becomes, is the cause, is it by chance or is it by design? We're here. I think, therefore I am. Jiva Goswami begins Tatsandarbha. Okay, I'm conscious. That much we all agree on. I'm not so sure about you, but at least I know I'm conscious. You may be part of my imagination, but at least I have an imagination. I have an internal world. There's a seer, the seen, and the act of seeing. I'll keep going. So, what is the... We're sitting in this temple. If you showed up and there was no table, there was no microphone, there was no speaker, you're all kind of milling around, hey, where's Bhagavatam class? What is a question that would come to your lips? Who's in charge? Hey, what happened? Whoa, where's Dharmatma? Where's the temple? What's happening? Wherever we see, this is human phenomena. You want to get real? It's human. Wherever we see order, wherever we see pattern, wherever we see symmetry, wherever we see repetition in order, there's intelligence behind it. That is our experience. Our experience is, wherever you see order, pattern, design, there's intelligence behind it. So there's a cause. We know we exist. We see pattern, symmetry, order, and it's not just, well, we're hunter-gatherers and we're trying to impose order on a chaotic universe because it's information. You know, there's a whole... No. We could spend time... We're trying to get to another point, so I'm going quickly. But the point is, there's a cause. The cause is intelligence. Now, whether it's form or formless, whether it's impersonal, distant, uncaring, that's another issue. But there's intelligence. Now, think about it. If you have a set of numbers and you take a subset of that numbers, then this is basic math. Axiomatic truth. Everybody accepts it, I think. Almost everybody. Everybody with a brain. If I have a set of numbers and I take a subset of that number, can I have anything in that subset of numbers that was not in the original number? Help me out. Anyone want to argue for there being some? Prabhupada nails it. Prabhupada says it in a much simpler way to understand. If I have an ocean, I take a drop of water from the ocean, can I have any quality in the drop that's not found in the ocean? No. Everybody, it's, of course not. We have form. We have activity. If God is Purnam, if God is absolute, if Aham Savasya Pravaho, Janmadasa Yataha, then that cause, which has some kind of intelligence, I don't know what it is, but it has some kind of it must have an aspect that has form. And as soon as you say form, there has to be relationships. There have to be activities. There has to be, and immediately you get into the rasas. There has to be God is, you get the Christian tracts that God is, looks like Lincoln Memorial and we're all tiny little, whatever it is. Okay. But there's a relationship. Now, if you go down that path, that God has to be full, has to be the fullest manifestation, the most complete. Nothing can exist in any other of the subsidiary manifestations that's not found in some form in the original. You got to start working your way up the rasas. Because fuller than neutrality is servitorship. It's fuller, it's richer, it's more comprehensive, it's more complex. It's a more fuller manifestation of the state of the thing. So you got to go from Das, you got to bing, 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 bing. You go all the way up. You have to go to Madhurya Ras. That Krishna, the supreme cause of all causes, has, and you have to go to Parakiya Rasa. As Bhakti Charumash said, that without, love, without some challenge and some, danger and risk, it makes it richer and sweeter. So that we believe that there's a transcendental supreme personality of Godhead who reciprocates in five main rasas. and has his own dimension where we can go and sport with him is not sentiment. It is not fanaticism. It is not, you know, immature. It is the most profoundly logical presentation of truth you can find on the planet, on any planet. It's true. So, now that I got that off my chest, what's the time? Prabhupada says that the theme of this song, this Damodar Ashtakam, Prabhupada says the theme is that you cannot conquer Krishna. We cannot. Prabhupada liked it. Kirtananda Maharaj told me this, that Prabhupada liked the saying, you cannot take the kingdom of God by storm. You can't conquer Krishna. So, you can't bind him. You can't capture him. You can't control him. So how to do it? What do we do? You can't appease him. People are always going on top of mountains or tying to trees or tying prayers onto kites. Some try to somehow or other communicate with God and make sure he hears what they have to say. You throw your prayers into fire and it goes up in smoke. Well, like God has a hearing problem, so there's a proximity issue. You know, if you get higher, maybe he'll hear you better. So, how to do it? How to develop, how to build that relationship with Krishna, with God? And it can't be done with ropes. And Sanatana Goswami says those ropes, it can't be done with karma, kanda. It can't be done with vairagya. It can't be done with jnana. You cannot tie Krishna. You can't capture him. He says those are the exact, there's many ways of looking at those ropes, but that's one of them. And I was looking at the word for word. It says kritau, which means you made them. Krishna made them devotees. It's his, what is the Sanskrit? Svakama bhakti. It's Krishna's bhakti. It's his possession. He has the right. We can't grab it from Krishna. He has to give it. As it says here, he made, liberated them and made them devotees, gave them his pure Krishna prema. Krishna can do. So the question becomes, once we've assuaged, I'm not in an empty universe, there is an absolute, and there is a personal relationship. What is that relationship? How to build it? How to capture Krishna? And I can't do it on my own. I can't do it by karma, not by jnana, not by vairagya, by no material formula. So the question should be, how to capture Krishna? Does that seem logical? How to get him? I can't capture. How to get him to agree to be captured? I can't capture him. He agreed to be tied. So how to get Krishna to agree to let me capture him? Okay, end of class. No, I'm not going to leave you there. Sanatana Goswami explains. If I want someone, if I want Krishna to sit in my heart, anyone here like to sit? Well, Prabhupada gives example of crows and swans. Where do you find? Confirmed. I have a little tape player I squeeze in the back at the appropriate times for sound effects. Where do you find crows? Birds of a feather flock together. Where do you find crows? Everybody knows. Where? Where there's garbage, nasty things. Where do you find swans? Clean, clear. If we want Krishna to sit in our heart, and Prabhupada in so many places, but Chaitanya Charitamrita, and cleansing the Gundicha temple, if we want Krishna to sit in our heart, is he going to sit in an unclean place? Is he going to sit in a place full of material desires? Is he going to sit in a place full of calm, crowed? He's not going to sit there. So, Malati Devi told me that a man grabbed Prabhupada's feet coming out of a pandal. Oh, Swamiji, Swamiji, save me. And as a sannyasi, he was, oh, give me blessings, like I'm some kind of saffron ATM, you know? Give me blessings, give me blessings. What are those blessings? Oh, well, my knee, or I'll get my kid through college, or, you know, whatever. Reverse in the stock market. So this man grabbed Prabhupada's feet. Give me your blessings, give me your blessings. Swami, save me, save me. That was the point. Swami, save me, save me. Prabhupada said, yes, I can save you. But you must do the work. I'm talking to myself. I'm not, you know. They say when you do like this, your three fingers are coming back toward you. So I'm speaking to myself. Don't worry. We have to do the work. The method is there. Prabhupada said, they asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada was, you know, a chemist. He had his pharmacy shop. And one of his friends said that, you know, you're a, and rightly so, said you're a great devotee. You're fixed in bhakti. Can you give me the formula? Can you make me a devotee? Prabhupada said, I know the formula, but mixing is a little difficult. So we have to do the work. And a cornerstone in this song, this Dhammadharastakam, repeatedly it talks about bowing down. That the living entity, that the jiva, we have the first, Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, the first step of wisdom, of knowledge, is humility. That we have to become humble. We have to bow. Trinadapi sunichena. If we want, you cannot, how are we going to attract Krishna? By cleansing the heart, and the first step is humility. One of the first things I heard Prabhupada say, I arrived late. Anyway, it's my duty to say some Prabhupada Leela. That's about me, so I'll stay on point. I came late. I heard Prabhupada say, it was in the old Los Angeles temple, La Cienega. Prabhupada said, it is all right that you don't bow down. It's all right that you don't bow down. He said, you can bow down out of knowledge. You can bow down out of love. Or you can have your head pushed down at the time of death. Everyone must bow down. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. It's the truth. So that recognition of a dependence on Krishna. It is a theme throughout the Bhagavatam that Krishna does not like to see his devotees proud. I mean, we have here the sons of Kuvera. They were cursed to become trees because they were arrogant in front of Narada Muni. We have in Krishna's Vrindavan Leela, we have Lord Brahma because he became puffed up. We have Indra because he came puffed up. It's a theme throughout the Bhagavatam that Krishna tamps down when the devotee becomes a little proud. We have Bali Maharaj. And if you think of it, you take the time, you don't have time to go into it, but this tamping down of the pride of the devotee, that is the secret. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord who maintains the gopis. Prabhupada said, Prabhu doesn't mean Prabhu, come shine my shoes. And again, I'm speaking to myself, don't get me wrong. But it is probably, I don't want to speculate, but certainly one of the most difficult things in the world. Jayadvaita was saying, if I'm the chief assistant bottle washer, what will you? There was a whole string of different things. You know, we become proud. Jarasandha is wrong 18 times, 17 times, whatever it was, you know. For me, I mean, I'm half dead. If I can get out of bed and walk to the temple, I think, whoa, I'm a great hero. So that simple mood of let me please Krishna, that humility, that simplicity, that I don't want anything. Actually, I've got everything. My problems are solved. Prabhupada on a morning walk in Mayapur. You can hear the tape. Now this was, I think it was 73. Anybody there in Mayapur in 73 from the West? Only building was the unfinished Conch building. Lotus, the unfinished lotus building. 74. And, I mean, it was tough. That's the where Prabhupada's giving the Mayapur lecture, and he starts to cry. He says, "You've come all the way from the West. I can't even give you milk, fresh cow's milk." And Prabhupada starts to cry. I mean, Prabhupada gave us everything, and yet he was feeling like that, that you've come here, I can't provide for you. I mean, we were sick. We were, everybody's covered with mosquito bites, you know, Mahatma Gandhi's weight loss program. I mean, everybody, the Bombay blues, everybody was just whacked. Sleeping in a construction. You remember what it was like? It was like too much, you know? And so you hear that Prabhupada's on this walk, and Prabhupada says, and with some sannyasis, maybe 10, 12 devotees, Prabhupada says, "Devotees don't suffer." And there's this long pause where people are trying to square that one with their immediate experience. And finally here, Panchadevita Maharaj says, Prabhupada, if the devotees don't suffer, what exactly are they doing? Because it surely, so this world is a rough place. It is not a nice place. You suffer in so many ways. I mean, I that's my favorite topic, but we don't have time. There's so, I mean, it's just not, don't, it's nothing to write home about, as my father used to say. It's just not a nice place. All the odds are stacked against us. All the odds. From every part of our body to our mind. My mind is causing me disturbance. And my solution is I'm going to get married and have another mind. Oh, well, that didn't work. Well, I'll have some kids. Oh, let me have some more minds. You know, I mean, householders are the backbone of our movement. I was a householder. Don't, you know, I hate such things. Nah, don't waste everybody's time with that. But the point is, let's be honest. How are we going to find peace in this world? It is not a nice place. So, I guess, if we think of Prabhupada's, if we want to do something with our life, we should want to do something with our life. Sudam told me that he was walking with Prabhupada in the LA airport. And anybody who ever went through an airport with Srila Prabhupada, I mean, it was no hold barred. I mean, it was, and I'm not exaggerating. Correct me if I'm exaggerating. At least 5, closer to 10 madangas, same amount of cartels minimum, throwing flower petals, distributing cookies, distributing books, full obeisances, blowing conch shells. We just took over. There's many airport stories where that wasn't always the best formula. That's another story. It got so crowded one time at the Detroit airport that businessmen couldn't catch their planes with all the devotees offering full danda, nama om, you know, saying the whole, you know. They started to push, the devotees started to push back, "Oh, you materialist, oh, you stupid," you know. And we were all young men. I mean, somebody was going to haul off and whack somebody and the whole thing was going to explode. Rupa Nuga Prabhu, I think it was sannyasi at the time, stood up on one of the, you know, the chairs in the airport and said, "All ISKCON devotees, all ISKCON devotees, please clear the terminal." Not one devotee moved. You know the only devotee who moved? Prabhupada. Picked up his beads. One of my leaders is giving an instruction. I'm an ISKCON devotee. I mean, there was no artifice. There was no pride. There was, of course, I'm you know. Nobody else. Well, who's he? I'm here next to him, you know. So, when Prabhupada arrived in Boston Harbor, he writes that, it brings tears to your eyes, "Insignificant beggar, what will I do here? What, how will they take the Krishna consciousness?" Prabhupada said, Boston, his experience was it smelled like lobster soup. Then later on, Prabhupada said, New York smelled like dog stool, you know? So, such a refined, saintly person. How many things are wrong in this picture? He's an old man. He's coming from a foreign country. He's telling them, shave their head in the, you know, age of long hair. Dogs run free, so why can't we? That was the motto of the hippies. And he's saying four regulative principles. I mean, come on. War of Vietnam, and he's talking about Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada said the whole purpose of Gita was to turn Arjuna from a no man to a yes man. You know, the Prabhupada's use of the term. So how many things are wrong in this picture? Prabhupada, before he came, the pujari at Advaita Bhavan in Mayapur told me that Prabhupada would sweep and cry. He'd be sweeping and crying. And the pujari asked, "Why are you crying?" And he said, "My Guru Maharaj has given me an impossible mission. Go to the West. An impossible mission." Prabhupada was praying, as Advaitacharya called down Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I was praying, please, how will I do it? Same thing. Prabhupada was sweeping at the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Samadhi in Mayapur, sweeping and crying. In front of Rupa Goswami Samadhi, that Gopal Chand, I think he's passed away, the Goswami, told me as a young boy he heard someone crying at night. He looked up, climbed over the wall, looked, there's Prabhupada in the middle of the night, sweeping and crying in front of Rupa Goswami Samadhi. That's Trinadapi Sunichena. That's humility. And with that power, we can change the world. And Prabhupada said this movement was not meant for small things. Prabhupada said the only thing that can defeat us, we can't be defeated outside, from the outside. We cannot be stopped. Prabhupada said we can only be defeated inside. And again, I'm speaking to myself. If we can develop, as we develop, to the degree that different things, and I'll end in a minute, different things have power of conductivity. Like this wood, practically nothing. No electrical current will go through this. A little bit better is metal. Well, I think a little bit better is water. A little bit better would be metal. Okay, which type of metal? Copper is better. But better than copper, they got fiber optics. There's less. So what determines the degree of current? Different materials, different degrees of conductivity. What determines how much of electrical current can flow through those different materials? Who said it? Less resistance. Less resistance, the more can flow. The more, and I'm speaking to myself, pride, envy, I want, I need, he didn't do this, this is that, I want peace. Prabhupada said, I spit on this peace. Oh, let me be peaceful. We will find Krishna. I'm in Kartik here for a month. I'm a GBC member, 11 months out of the year, my head is squeezed in a vice by people's problems. Fine, it's my service. Everything that nobody else can solve comes to the GBC. Oh, you deal with it. Okay, fine. I'm not complaining. Don't get me wrong. That's my tapasya. But for 1 month out of the year, I read, I chant. So I'm not deprecating the potency of the holy Dham. Don't get me wrong. And the need for study and for introspective and being contemplative or contemplative. Don't get me wrong. But Prabhupada said it. We will not find Krishna in the bushes of Vrindavan. We will find Krishna in our service, in the ecstasy of service. And we are not bliss hounds. I was in L.A. Prabhupada came in, he saw the deities. Little deities, we didn't have the big deities in those days. We looked up, it's a long story, but we looked up, Prabhupada was stunned. He could not speak. And his cheeks were wet from tears. And did Prabhupada get a snapshot of that, put it on Facebook, advertise how he was experiencing ecstasy, come to me, touch my lotus feet because I'm experiencing ecstasy? No way. What did Prabhupada do? We saw him. He took a deep breath and he just suppressed it. He pushed it all down. Why? It was getting in the way of his duty to his spiritual master. He was teaching his Ishopanishad. He had a duty. He had his students there, and his duty was to train his students. And this ecstasy was in the way. Daruka is experiencing ecstasy. It's in the way of his fanning. He curses it. Sukadev Goswami doesn't mention the names of the gopis in the Bhagavatam because he begins to cry and he can't do his job. He goes into ecstasy. He didn't push it aside. Do a word search on automatic or automatically. It's fun. Do a word automatically. You will become Krishna. Do ABCD. It will happen automatically. You will become Krishna conscious automatically. Do this, this, that. You'll become automatically. It doesn't mean by osmosis. It doesn't mean like a bonehead and it'll just, or an electrical current. But it means if you follow the process, if you follow sincerely, honestly, everything else, jnana, vairagya, all ecstasy, everything will come as a subsidiary byproduct. It will, prema bhakti will come as a subsidiary byproduct of Trinadapi Sunichena. Let me serve the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And let me serve the Vaishnavas. So that is at least one scope of the aspect of this verse. If we think, we'll end here, but we should think, this is a message of hope. This song is a message of hope. This movement is a message of hope. This process of bhakti given to us by Srila Prabhupada. How to? Prabhupada said, I've given you the decorations, just go and hang them. Prabhupada said, I've given you the structure, just decorate it. And then Prabhupada said, I was sitting in the room. Prabhupada said, actually, I've given you the decorations, just go and hang them. Confirmed. So, the process of bhakti, this song, ISKCON, our life, being able to be devotees, it is a message of hope. It is a message of confidence. Let me just become Krishna's devotee, leave this world, go back home, back to Godhead, and in the meantime, we can make this world Vaikuntha, more than Vaikuntha. That was the point I wanted to make, and I'll end. We are not, Prabhupada said, this movement is not meant for small things. We are not meant to just live in Radhakund. I'm not deprecating Radhakund, don't get me wrong. But we're not meant to just live in Radhakund and experience ecstasy and go back to Godhead by ourselves. That is not the mood of Prahlad Maharaj. That is not the mood of our acharyas. That is not the mood of Srila Prabhupada. And having that mood will block us from achieving that ultimate goal. But if we have that mood that let me give Krishna to others, let me be a humble servant and let me give Krishna to others, everything will come. That's the message of this song. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.